like I promised, we're back. And this is the Taylor Report, CIUT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Taylor. And I think we're joined by publisher of Baraka Books, Robin Philbutt.
Hi, Phil.
How are you?
Very well, yourself.
Well, I'm coming down from my McGregor-Mayweather high, but I can now talk about other things. And very important, you had all the people who want to be the leaders of the New Democratic Party went to Montreal and debated. And it's not very clear to me what occurred there, but we certainly want to know what sort of political thinking at the moment in Quebec is about the NDP and what they think of this debate, if you could give us, even if your own point of view, but if what you know about the reaction to it.
Yeah, the one of the candidates, Guy Caron, who's the only Quebecer running for the leadership, came out with a statement on Saturday where he raised the question of Quebec's rights. And in it, you know, and this question, he said, the NDP, unless it wants to be marginalized for another 40 years, has to come to grips with Quebec politics and understanding. And he said, I don't like this proposed bill called Bill 62 on religious neutrality, or here we call it laïcité, religious neutrality, but it's up to Quebec to decide. And to treat the debate as just a question of racism, or the fact that it's being discussed as just racism, is showing a total misunderstanding of what Quebec's all about.
Mm-hmm.
He put this out on Saturday, probably because he knew what I don't want to know. I'm not going to try and second guess him. His position, in my opinion, was about time, in a sense, that people started talking about the questions of Quebec's rights and the right to self-determination. He pointed out that he was an author of the Sherbrooke Declaration, which is said to have been one of the key points in giving Jack Layton his big boost in 2011.
Well, what was that? What was in there?
Basically, he said, we will recognize a vote in Quebec on the question of sovereignty based on a 50%
50 plus 1,
and which is a break from what the conservatives and the liberals were saying, and which the NDP had said in the past, where they all basically got together. So it was a break. It was a timid move on this fundamental question of the right of self-determination.
Mm-hmm.
But it was one of the points that led Jack Layton to his big win in Quebec, because they ended up replacing the Bloc. I think they had 50 seats mm-hmm. out of 75. So it was something that had never been done in the past. And then they, in 2015, they lost
it.
They say, and I'm not even sure that's true, but the NDP went down because it tried to say two things at once about the question of somebody getting a citizenship with a face covered wearing a niqab.
Mm-hmm.
That's what people say, that's what made Mulcair lose.
I never bought that idea. I didn't.
Nor did I. But
it was the rise of the handsome young man with fresh ideas. And
yeah, and Mulcair was not. Mulcair had some skeletons in the closet here in Quebec.
Quite a few skeletons. He used to be the Liberal Party cabinet minister, right?
Yeah, and he also flirted with the Conservatives. He was he had a certain vicious side to him, and a lot of people did not.
I don't think that's a past tense.
No, well, he has. Well, he had, because he's no longer.
Yes.
And so the debate came up. Now, it's because there is some questions about whether Mr. Singh, who is apparently the leading candidate in English speaking Canada, his insistence on wearing a turban and the kirpan.
Mm-hmm.
Would not go over well here mm-hmm. because of the big debate on religious symbols and religion and the state.
And well, by the way, Caron told a story, did he not? I think I saw this in Devoir. That about his mother, or was it his grandmother, had trouble with the church, and he tried to make people understand what Quebec has their evolution has been on this issue of church and state.
Yeah, well, one of the things, and I think if I can say it in about 2 minutes, historically, one of the ways that the British controlled Quebec after the conquest and so on was through the Catholic Church. It was the Catholic Church that they were prepared to give ground to because the French were the overall, the big majority in Canada. And so they were much more, there were many more French-speaking people than there were English in Canada. So one of the ways that they were able to put down revolt was working through the Catholic Church and giving them power to the point that, and as a result, many Quebecers started seeing the Catholic Church as a way to defend themselves, but it also had its downside where it controlled education until the Quiet Revolution, until the 1960s. It was religiously controlled education, the Protestant school system and the Catholic school system. And this was all basically thrown out with the Quiet Revolution. And we said, no, and the Quebecers said, no longer are we going to have the state government working, you know, like very close to the religion. I mean, for instance, even my kids who are in their 30s, there were still some people who were sisters. They were very good teachers, by the way, but they were nuns, and they would wear these uniforms at the time. And little by little, that was all basically phased out, even though you have all these old Catholic names of schools. But that's, you know, there's nothing Catholic about the school system anymore at all, or Protestant for that matter. They had non-confessional school boards. This is all in the wake of the Quiet Revolution. People see it, and I'm not sure whether it's true, but a lot of people see the return of religion as being a threat, whether it be, and it's also because of the turn of Catholicism. There's a certain number, there's a certain branch of the Catholic Church that wants to come back and take it. So that there is a sensitivity towards religious, and it's not all right-wing, reactionary, racist.
These are the words that come up rather too quickly.
And so Caron's position was saying, if you start going in this way, you're just not showing anything. Now, he says, I'm not that keen on this. I'm not keen on this bill. But if the Quebec National Assembly, which is elected according to all the rules, decides on this, well, it's up to Quebec to decide, and it's not up to the federal government or a prime minister to contest it or take it to court. And this is where Singh, and who was then joined in somebody who took in by the two other candidates, basically said, well, if it would be worth considering contesting this before the tribunals, before the courts. And as prime minister, they let on that they would support that kind of thing. What we're doing, it's deja vu all over again, because when the Quebec government adopted the French language charter in 1977, 40 years ago this week, you know, Bill 101, they call it. Well, the first thing they did was they sent these lawyers in, and they've been constantly, for the last 40 years, rolling back parts of that French language charter, which was to make Quebec a place where French French speaking people had the rights to work, live, and do things in French as people in Ontario do so in English.
Yes.
So, and I think Caron knew what he was doing.
If we were to put this in mere tactical terms, he seemed to have snookered his opponents.
Yeah, but he also raised, and if you look at his principal
position. Another boxing reference by way of snooker.
Yeah, he is, I think it's a principled position, and I think it's important for people to be raised this question, because everybody's talking about the right of self-determination of Indigenous, the First Nations, but they seem to have forgotten as well that Quebec is
another nation. Which, by the way, the Parliament, remember when they passed it and they all looked at each other and said, what do we just do?
Yeah, exactly. and the thing is, it's like putting your money where your mouth is. They have to,
which
know.
Is always tough.
It is
a painful experience.
And so there's the media here have said, well, this is a serious question, without taking a position, and it's not. I mean, mm-hmm. Basically, Bill 62 says that people have to can expect to have services given to them with their face uncovered, mm-hmm. and they to receive services. Somebody goes in to renew their driver's license. Mm-hmm. They have to have their face uncovered when they go and take a picture, because these things have pictures on them. Yeah. You know, these identity cards. So that's basically what they're saying. They're not going into all the other questions which were previously raised with the so-called Charter of Values.
So the numbers now the Mr. Caron, he probably was leading anyway, but he must have strengthened himself, didn't he?
I'm sure he could. In Quebec, he strengthened himself.
After all, that's what that was about. And there was a moment of truth for them, because I was saying it by way of introduction. This is a state with two countries, two nations, and federal politicians talk like there's only one, and then but eventually they have to go to Quebec, and then they have to say, I forgot about this, and it sort of bites them. And this one bit a few people. Now, by the way, I really do recommend that Devoir did publish a good story. I really urge everybody to read it, because when you do on your computer, it will translate for you, and you will get yourself a very interesting summary of the debate.
Exactly.
And how it went. Now, I have to ask you another matter, which is hit our system here, which is school teachers and others have raised this matter of whether or not John A. McDonald's statues and names should be on everything that we have, and recommending that he should not so much. And this comes down to something we spoke to you earlier about, and this was the issue of residential schools, which everybody now says was a terrible, 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 inhumane thing, which was created by our federal leadership, and it was John A.'s government. And John A. had some things to say about that. But out west, about a month ago, they had a big headline. They're very proud. They had taken the name off a building because it was the name of a cabinet minister under John A., and we spoke to you at the time, and you said that wasn't fair. Tell us why.
Yeah. Well, it was Hector-Louis Langevin. And they took, minor correction, they took the name off the second biggest building in the on Parliament Hill, and it was called the Langevin Building, and now it's becoming they changed the name to the Office of the Prime Minister and the Privy Council, just
that's exciting.
A name with no... And they changed the name of a bridge in Alberta at the same time because they said that he had been the person who thought up the residential school system. This is false. But they also said he was the Minister of Indian Affairs when it was adopted. That is false. The Minister of Indian Affairs in 1883 was John A. MacDonald himself. Mm-hmm. And it was his policy. Langevin had been Minister of Indian Affairs in 1869 only. And when it was adopted, it was 14 years later. And if you allow me to quote...
Please do.
What John A. MacDonald said on residential schools, and this is in 1879, 4 years before they adopted the law. And here it is, I quote, "When the school is on the reserve, the child lives with its parents." Notice it said its parents, mm-hmm. "who are savages. And though he may learn to read and write, his habits and training mode of thought are Indian. He is simply a savage who can read and write. It has been strongly impressed upon myself as head of the department," this is John A. speaking, "that Indian children should be withdrawn as much as possible from the parental influence, and the only way to do that would be to put them in central training industrial schools where they will acquire the habits and modes of thought of white men." That was John A. MacDonald. Mm-hmm. So there, in my opinion, there's no doubt about the responsibility for that system. It lays with John A. Macdonald.
By the way, he was speaking to Parliament when he said that, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And this was 79, and it was adopted in 83. And the other thing about John A. Macdonald is that he was the man who hanged Louis Riel and eight leaders of First Nations in the West. Eight, they hanged them all. And Riel, this was in 85, he hanged them. And for months prior to that, he'd been receiving hundreds and hundreds of letters from Quebec, and also the Premier of Quebec, Honoré Mercier, and even Wilfrid Laurier, were very much opposed to the hanging of Riel. Laurier was a Prime Minister of Canada as well. And he said, and this was in fall of 1885, this was like a few months before Riel was hanged, which was November 16, 1885, he said, "He shall hang, though every dog in Quebec shall bark in his favor." He was getting a tremendous opposition from Quebec. And the Toronto Daily Mail, which is the thing, said that rather than living under the yoke of the French Canadians, Ontario will break the Confederation. This was written at the same time. And they were calling for the hanging of Riel. And that was an orange newspaper, Daily Mail.
Was there any other kind?
In Ontario, I doubt it.
Yeah.
Yeah. And he said, and he also, it also said, there will not be a 1763, which 1763, which meant they made compromises with the French-speaking population. He said the French-Canadian population shall lose. In other words, so this is John A. Macdonald when he hanged Riel, and he was also very much against Quebec at the time because Quebec was supporting Riel and his Métis people. So anyway, that's
very important.
We're dealing with a man who unsavory is the understatement.
Yes, and we have this phenomenon of creating fall guys. In other words, it's the Globe and the Star and others. They don't want to let go of John. They're willing to throw other people overboard, people who didn't do it or were only his lieutenants. But strange, neurotic idea that, well, we got to keep John A.
Yeah,
everybody be fine
with
that.
They do. Parliament still exists. But also Justin Trudeau and the others, they
still got the Queen,
parties,
for crying out loud.
Yeah, they say, we'll drop Langevin. It just so happened that the only two French-speaking fathers of Confederation who were left were Langevin and Georges-Étienne Cartier. And now Langevin is gone, so there's only one left, Georges-Étienne Cartier. In other words, the key to Confederation, if you want to say it, the key to making Confederation was reaching agreement with the French-speaking population, and now they're just knocking out one of the so-called fathers of Confederation, which nobody got too excited about when Langevin was his name was removed and from those two places, but now they're rallying around John A.
Yes, well, it'll be a good contest because you just gave us an actual quote from John A. Macdonald speaking to Parliament, and if they want to wear that, we'll put it around their necks for them, and they can see if they can defend or explain. He, by the way, he put the policy as clearly as it could be put. This is the whole point of colonialism. This is the missionary business. We're going to civilize people. It was done and everybody knows in the U.S. They had created what were called civilized tribes. And what they meant was that they were Christians and dressed, you know, and did everything in according to the so-called the white man's way. And then, of course, when they were in the way, they were then moved down the Trail of Tears to Oklahoma.
Right.
They did everything and still got tread upon.
Right.
And the same happened here, because, you know, frankly, colonialism is a DNA in that of supremacy, right. of European white so-called supremacy. And it's got to be cured.
The speech in 79, and then the adoption of the law of the residential school system, it was only deployed because they hanged Riel and the other leaders. I mean, they were, you know, this is, once again, you know, you think about these things in a two-year period, you have the adoption of this law. It's aimed largely for the West, but then they run into a problem with Riel. Because Riel rallies the Métis and the other nations there, mm-hmm. Blackfeet and others, then they hang them. I mean, these things go together. You can't just say, okay, well, we have the residential school system. No, yes. I mean, it had to do with this policy moving west and colonialism, as you say.
Yeah, I think, by the way, you've underlined something for us, too. You said that it were not just Riel, but eight others hanged as well.
Yeah.
So,
if I'm not mistaken, it was Poundmaker, and I'll have to go back and get the list.
Well, the Taylor Report will undertake to talk about their names and spell it all out, who they were and what were the whole story.
Yeah,
it becomes a kind of historical convenience to say Riel, but yes, and
but Riel rallied them, leaders. And Riel became the leader. But he was in solidarity with them, and they were in solidarity with him.
Yes,
it's just his name has been maintained, among other things, because he had a huge support in Quebec. He would have been, otherwise; they might have been totally forgotten.
Yes, well, the story you've told us illustrates the moment. Some have called that this is the birth of Quebec nationalism.
Yeah, well,
was
you
the
know,
decision to ignore
one
their
week
wishes.
After the hanging, just a historical note: 16th of November, he's hanged. The 22nd of November, in front of what is now the city hall, what they call the Champ de Mars, there were people. The count is there were 50,000 people demonstrating. About Riel, and the Premier of Quebec, Honoré Mercier, said, our brother Louis Riel is dead.
Mm-hmm.
And you can see the importance of this event.
It was a transformative moment in a way that the killers didn't anticipate.
Exactly.
Robin Philpott, thank you very, very much. It's most edifying, and it set us a good task. We're going to
and I will get you the question of these other who the other leaders were, the other chiefs were who were hanged.
Yes, I think we have that's a very important responsibility. We don't want to.
No,
it's now particularly with this issue of indigenous nations trying to establish. And get the treaties recognized and their nations respected. We better get all those names. We've mentioned everybody who was hanged and make sure everybody knows the names.
Yeah, and they could not have deployed the residential school system if these chiefs had not been eliminated. I'm sure they would have run into problems all along the line. That's mm-hmm. one of the reasons they probably.
Yeah.
They hang them all. Anyway, we'll
do that, they will run. The trouble is still coming.
That's for sure.
They will have to pay for this. Well, Robin, thank you very, very much.
Thank you.
Okay.
Bye-bye. Bye.
This is Taylor Report, CAUT, 89.5 FM. And I apologize, we didn't get Harry Glass speak, and I'm sure it's my fault. I don't know what I did, but I think I messed up. His book, though, I want to tell you, is titled Class Privilege. How Law Shelters Shareholders and Coddles Capitalism. I don't know if you've seen this book, Phil. But it does make the case we need to have about the all the various devices, particularly Harry's interested in the legal ones, by which people of great wealth avoid responsibilities when oil spills happen, when mines collapse, blow up, ships sink, et cetera, and everybody said, well, that was a terrible disaster. Who's responsible? Turns out, nobody. Don't look at me. And, I thought about it. I was going to say to Harry that we watch gangster movies, and when they catch the bad guy, a really bad guy, he always he says to his partner, call my mouthpiece, get him down here, and the mouthpiece comes. It's the same way with corporations, get the mouthpiece. But they, instead they're called corporate lawyers, but it's a mouthpiece. And so I think we've done it, and I've got to thank Francois, thank Phil Conlon. I'm Phil Taylor. You've been listening to Taylor Report, and we'll see you next week.